Hey, MacNez Podcast, episode 91. Coming to the end of the Halloween Havoc for this year, October 2017. But hey, Mike's back. He's got to help me out with this one because, man, we both seen this. I saw it in the theater. When did you see this?
I saw it down the hill from the folks' house when it first came out.
I saw that Parkway.
This movie is phenomenal. No. Go ahead, man.
I didn't see it when it came out. It came back later. This came out in 1979. Oh, well, we're talking about Prophecy. That's what we're talking about. This episode, it came out in June 1979. I didn't see it actually until 1980 when Friday the 13th came out, the first one, because this was the movie that was playing with it.
And to listeners, this isn't to be confused with the 1994 Christopher Walken The Prophecy, that series. This is called Prophecy, and it's a whole nother animal. No pun intended. The second time it came out, the second run is when I saw it too. And mine at the theater I was at was double featured with Food of the Gods.
Yeah, that would have been awesome. I only seen that one on channel on TV. Food of the Gods. If you're interested in that one,
the 3:30 movie.
Yeah, on Channel 7. It's streaming on Netflix. The whole movie's on there. I love that movie. I mean, I think that movie's awesome. But this one, it is considered science fiction horror film. I don't know so much science fiction, but definitely horror. What would you say?
I would say it's environmental fiction because it has to do with a lot of how mankind pollutes the environment and how it changes the DNA of a lot of the wildlife there, which is the main crux of the story. And there's some science, but it's more environmental fiction, environmental hazard, and how it affects nature and then how that nature turns on us.
Yeah.
But definitely has horror qualities. I mean, in the vein of same vein as like Jaws or another sleeper hit way back in the 70s, this movie called Grizzly, or in some cases it's called Killer Grizzly. But basically it's just they were going to call the movie Paws because of the bear paws, you know, but after Jaws they just ended up calling Grizzly. But yeah, man, Prophecy, yeah, environmental and horror.
Yeah, I was on Wikipedia, and that's what it said, sci-fi horror. Same thing on IMDb. This was directed by John Frankenheimer. What else has he done? Do you know offhand?
John Frankenheimer is...
Geez, he's done a ton of stuff.
Oh, yeah, he's done a lot of movies. But I will say with this one... for the listeners out there, if you ever want to see a creepy movie trailer, watch this one. Go on YouTube and watch the original Prophecy movie trailer. It's creepy. Because it's in the 70s and 80s, horror trailers were very, very good. You should do a show on just horror trailers.
I know.
This is one of them.
Yeah. Speaking of trailers, I'll play it right now.
It is not the offspring of witchcraft or Satan. It was created by man. It will grow to be 15 feet tall. It will have huge eyes, webbed hands, hooked claws. It will walk upright. And it will mindlessly, mercilessly kill every living thing it meets. Prophecy.
Yeah, dude, I just love the trailers of these early 80s, 70s, late 70s horror movies, or just trailers in general. They always do do them pretty good justice. But my only problem with some of these trailers is they put the whole movie in the trailer.
Yeah. Yeah. Another trailer that's totally creepy that even now, sometimes when I'm laying in bed at night and I'm on YouTube, I have my headphones on, and I'll watch these and just still freak myself out. One of the ones that really scared me was that for It's Alive. Oh. That watch that one. that one too. That trailer and the trailer for I know there's one for The Exorcist that was banned. And if you want to check it out, it's called the just Exorcist Band trailer. And that one's just really freaky. Watch that one at night with all the lights off. I dare you.
Oh, man. But this movie, a logging company's waste mutates the environment, creating a giant killer bear monster. That's IMDb's. Wikipedia is... Film follows an environmental agent and his wife filling out a report on a paper mill in the river, not knowing the paper mill's waste made of local bear waste made a local bear mutate, having the bear turn rampant in the wilderness. Yeah, that's pretty much what the movie is. Yes, it's the all or nothing days with the practical effects. And yes, the bear, the mutated bear does look cheesy and everything, but hey, it's 1979. I mean, there's no CGI, there's none of that. So, but you got to look at this movie, two different ways than just being a regular horror movie and a more of truth of what goes on throughout the United States. Some people don't want to believe that it's going on, but it does go on, and it's still going on to this day. But before we get into that, because that's a little political talk, the movie is it stars Robert Foxworth, Taya Shire, Amanda Sante, Victoria. Jeez, I don't know. See, everyone, me and last names, Racimo, or I don't know.
Oh, Racimo, Victoria, yeah. Racimo, yeah.
And Richard A. Daystart,
Richard Daystart, yeah. From Dr. Copper from John Carpenter's The Thing.
Yeah, and this guy was my favorite character in the movie, Hector Murray, George Klutze. I don't know how to tell you said that. The old Indian guy.
Yeah, that guy was cool.
I liked him. I can't even pronounce the tribe he is. I went on YouTube and looked up how to pronounce it, but it's... I'll spell it. T-S-E.
Spell it.
T-S-E-S-H-A-H-T. There's no T sound. I think it was more of just an... I was listening to how they pronounce it on YouTube, and I forgot it. But though he was a Canadian native, so I know he was native, and some of the extras in this were also native. There was a guy in this movie, I can't remember which one. My mom said he knew him because I guess he. He was on
he's,
the
bowling. He's the bull.
Yeah, he was on the bowling team.
My mom and dad, when we watch that movie, they're like, hey, that's old, what's his name? And in the credits, they're like, oh, and then, of course, you know, Pops pulls out the photo album. And he's like, here he is right here with us in Reno. I was like, oh. Yeah, so that I remember that. He's the dude with the, he's got a red headband on.
He's the guy with long hair. I remember that.
Yeah. Yeah,
because I remember when they used to see him, they go, "Oh, there's the movie star," and I had no idea what they were talking about. But And I think just some of the other more of the just the extras that were real natives. But Hector, the guy George, he played or he was kind of one of the main, not the main focus, but one of the ones that explained what was happening. But Robert Foxworth, he is a doctor. Him and his wife, Maggie, Adrian, that's what we're going to call her in this one. but the doctor and Adrian, they were in Washington, D.C., because I remember they drove by the White House. He's just a doctor just trying to do his thing, and he gets called by the Environmental Protection Agency to go out to Maine. Here's another name I can't pronounce. The Androscoggin River?
Androscoggin?
Yeah, that river in Maine. They wanted him to go out there and just do environmental tests on the river because it's dealing with a sawmill. And so he goes out there just to see what it is. But when they go out there, he finds out that there's more going on out there. Because in the very beginning of the movie, you see these loggers going out in the woods and they're running around with their dogs at night and you have no idea what to do. And all of a sudden they start hauling ass and chasing something. And their dogs end up running off a cliff. And the loggers rappel down to go get their dogs. And next you know, you hear the screaming and roaring, and they end up dead. So while the doctor and Adrian are with the
foreman.
Yeah. Like I assume just the main foreman for the sawmill.
Yeah,
he's kind of taking them around, and they come across Amanda Sante and Victoria Racimo.
Yeah.
They play John and Ramona Hawks. I assume she was Mexican or something, and Amanda Sante, I don't know what he is, but he's not native. I know he was Italian in Gotti or one of those HBO shows, but
he was what's his name? Dredd's twin in the Stallone Judge Dredd.
Yeah. Oh man, what was his name in that now? That was in the 90s.
Yeah, I remember we saw that with Congo
Rico. Yeah, that was his name. Rico! I just remember that. Yeah. Okay, he's Italian-American. All right, so he's Italian. But since they couldn't get any natives to be one of the main guys, they pick him. I mean, which was cool. I mean, I did like his character in this. But we come across John and Ramona Hawks, and they're Isley, I believe that's the foreman's name. She's telling him, "Oh yeah, these guys are out here, supposedly protecting." That's just to kind of what you're getting from him, and basically the natives don't want the paper mill cutting down all the trees on the res, and they're just trying to protect. I mean, this is the res. This is the creation. That's their home, and they don't want all the trees to be cut down. So they kind of get into a little scuffle, and because the paper mill people, Isley, he believes that the missing lumberjacks were killed by some of the local natives. They called them the Opies.
The Opies.
Yeah, which stood for original people, which is true. We can't get around that. So all the natives are basically just trying to stop the destruction of their home, as well as them putting chemicals into the water that's causing all these health problems and deformed children and everything.
this like stillborn children, because they're putting mercury in the water to as using it as a sealant for their wood, and they're treating the wood with it, the trees that they cut down and the wood, and then they're storing them in these lagoons that the tribe uses as a water source. So all that chemicals is creeping in the water, so children are born deformed or stillborn. There's also like the wildlife, like there's one scene where they catch a tadpole and it's like the size of a puppy, like this giant bug-eyed tadpole. And then at one point when Robert Foxworth is fishing, he sees that big old trout eat a duck.
Yeah.
So it's like think that the water is being contaminated by this mercury, methyl mercury, that's coming from the sawmill and pretty much everything right there. Then the OPs are just trying to keep that stuff out of there because it's killing their people. It's, you know, like at one point Armando Sante says, some of our people drink the water, but then they're stumbling around like they're drunk when they haven't had a drop of alcohol. And what they find out is that mercury's eating away at their brain. It's they're slowly being poisoned by that water.
Yeah, I mean, other than all that, I mean, and the Environmental Protection Agency, they can't get any reading of all that because mercury is heavy and it sinks to the bottom and it doesn't leave any kind of a residue or anything, but it does eventually seep into everything in the water, and it's just messing other than the wildlife, all the natives and everybody there. I'm surprised it probably would have leaked into the town, but who knows? I think that the river is constantly running, so I assume they're getting their water supply before it actually hits the mill. And like you said earlier, that the ponds that are filling up with the logs, that is for the natives. That's where they're drinking, because this one little area, Ramona's grandfather, Hector, he says, yeah, this is a part of the woods where everything grows big. And you see, like Mike said, the big tadpole, the big fish we saw earlier in the film, the trees are growing so big, the roots are on the outside, not buried underground. And Ramona's grandfather said, this is part, we're part of everything in God's creation, just all of us, the woods, humans, the animals, everything else. So I liked a lot of that, especially because he was an elder. He was trying to teach his tribe the old ways, because he said, because no one was learning it. I mean, and that's true. Like now, I mean, we have to learn from our elders on who we are and how that's how it was before us. I mean, it's a big, in Native communities, that's a big thing. We need to know who we are and where we came from. I know there's a lot of kids out there now that just don't even care. And every time I meet Navajos, I always ask my younger kids, well, what's your clan? And most of them know it, but some of them are, I don't know. And I always tell them, just go ask your mom or your dad, whoever is Navajo. Sometimes it's both. Sometimes it's just one or the other. And I just said, just find out that. And next time I see you, I'll ask you. Most of the time, the kids that I did ask, I ask them again, and they know. So it's good for you young listeners to know where you came from and who your people are. Not just natives, everybody. I think it's good to know your past and where your people came from, be whatever race you are. Always know your history, because later down in life, if you have children, they're gonna want to know. And it'd be awesome for you to tell them who you are and who they are and who you are and where you come from. So, but that's what Hector was doing. He was just trying to teach the tribe members and everything. So, but with all that going on, that was kind of a little side thing that was going on. I mean, Armando Sante said it earlier, because when he was kind of talking to the doctor was more of, he was thinking, he was just believing what Isley was saying, that they're just drunks and they're just out here causing trouble and trying to stop them from doing their jobs. And Amon DeSante's character, John Hawks, he told me, he goes, I learned your schools, I learned your laws. And he was just saying that basically you can't bring that to the Reds because some people don't want to believe this, but sometimes the law, it doesn't reach out on the Reds. I mean, because there's many, just look into all kinds of different cases.
If any of you viewers want to see a good movie about what Nez just said about the law not reaching to the Rez, we highly recommend you see Wind River.
Oh.
That's a prime example of how Native issues on the reservation are just falling on deaf ears. And, you know, through an investigation of hundreds of missing Native women, how the government sees fit to only send one fed to investigate miles and miles of land. So along those lines, yeah, that's a prime example of what we're talking about here too.
And I mean, that's what was happening here. They sent one guy out there to try to figure out what's going on, but luckily they sent out this guy because he was in the beginning of the movie. He was where he was dealing with sick children in the ghetto
Yeah.
And they were just 100 people living in one apartment, and they were all getting bit by rats because there was a little baby that got bit, and he ended up taking that kid to the hospital, and he was worried about all the conditions of where they live. And the mother said that the landlord don't care, the police don't even go to that area. And I mean, that was true, man. That's just like the Rez. I mean, they don't care what happens out there. And that's what the lady said in the beginning. They said, they don't care how we live. They know how we live and they don't care. That's why they just let them live like that. And that's what they do on some reservations. I'm not going to say all of them, but majority of the ones that I visited that were really small, they just don't seem to care. And I know it might be hard for some of you to grasp that, but I mean, that's life. I mean, I know it's not just Native communities, because in this it was also in the Black community, but community, it doesn't matter what color you are. There's always some community where it's just people don't give two shits about. But so back to this movie, the doctor realized, figured, okay, this is what's causing everything. But now his thing was, we need proof. I can't just go back with this test, because like I said, that mercury doesn't come up on the test. So he goes, I need proof that this is what's going on here. Because he was really grilling the sawmill guy, and that guy was just like, nah. He goes, everything's good. We do tests and all that, and the water's fine. So they end up finding some, hearing about some people that were murdered in the woods, and that was I love this scene. I know it was pretty brutal, but there's a family that was out backpacking. It was a dad and his two kids, his young son and his teenage daughter. Oh man, it's funny watching this scene, but I mean, it's pretty brutal.
Yeah, it was pretty vicious animal attack, but I mean, if you want to see a kid, you know, sailing through the air in his sleeping bag after getting swatted by a bear, this is the movie to see it. it's horrific, but you know, at the same time, like, you know, it's just kind of, you know, in an eerie way, it's comical. But
yeah,
you know, it like we said, it's an '80s, it's a '70s '80s movie, holds nothing back. So
yeah, I mean, and this movie was what, PG? And
yeah,
it was pretty brutal. but I mean, it's funny. I mean, you can actually go find that. This movie is streaming on YouTube, but the only thing that sucks about it, it's like broke up into parts. But you can go to like a bear attack scene prophecy or whatever, and it'll show you the scene that we're talking about. But they're sleeping, they hear something, they wake up, and it's this big giant deformed bear. Hector called it something. What did he call it?
Katahdin.
Yeah, he called it that.
He said it's parts of everything that is alive. It's part fish, it's part mountain lion, its part. And that's what his belief was that it was a, it was kind of like a god, like a god or a monster that protects them, that protects the tribe. That's what he believed, that it protected the tribe. It was called upon to, you know, keep. That's why it was. That's why he said it was killing the loggers, because they were invading the land, and it was there. The Katahdin was there to protect them.
Yeah, he said that they awoke it. That's why it's here. So that's what they were all calling it. And I believe that. I mean, I'm all for that. But we do know it's because of the Mercury. But every tribe has their own different protectors. But anyway, so when they show the bear, deformed bear, They kind of just like show like its arms and its head and maybe its torso. You never really see the feet, but when you do see the feet, it's like just a shot of the feet. But, I mean, you can totally see that it's a deformed bear, but it looks funny. I mean, if you haven't seen this, you just have to see it. The kids wake up. The dad gets killed. Did they both get swatted? Just that one boy got. The boy jumps up and he's in one of those like mummy.
Sleeping bags.
Yeah, where just his face is showing and he couldn't get out of the zipper or whatever. So he starts hopping away and the bear turns around, just swat. And then he just goes flying across and into a tree. And you see all the down feathers. It was brutal, but it's funny because just how it looks now. But back when we were kids, when we saw this, we didn't think it was very funny. It was scary.
Yeah.
But the loggers come across. They don't show all this. The loggers come across and find them and say that they actually roll up to the reservation and they want John Hawks because they just assume he's the leader and he's behind all the killings. So he ends up just taking off and running away. And they're saying, well, we want them because they killed him. And the doctor's like, well, what's your proof? And he goes, our proof is at the hospital in baskets. So basically that bear just shredded up that family. So they're like, well, we want to go see the crime scene, basically, out in the woods. So they jump in a helicopter and they go flying over to see it. And it's really bad weather. It's raining. They get there and they find there's just blood and sleeping bags all over the place. And while there's Adrian is sitting in the helicopter with the pilot. The pilot is kind of explaining, oh, see those nets over there? That's where the people, they catch fish and everything. So she kind of just walks over there to see what it is. And she hears something and she looks and she sees one of the little deformed cubs. There's actually two of them there. One's dead and the other one's still squirming around because his head's sticking out of the water. So she screams, the doctor and everybody come running over. And John Hawks takes both of them. So he keeps the one that's alive. They wrap it up and they like, well, what are we going to do with this? And the doctor says, this is the proof that we need, that I need to take back to what's going on here. So, but the helicopter pilot's like, hey, we can't go nowhere, man. We're stuck here. This weather's too crazy. So Hawk says, hey, our village is this way. So let's haul ass over there. So they end up going there. And then when they're there, they're just kind of just trying to just stay warm, and they're saying, well, we need to get word to Isley and his crew. So they end up coming, and the doctor goes, okay, well, I have proof that your sawmill is putting stuff into the water. So he takes him into the teepee. They see that little deformed bear laying there, still alive, and Isley kind of walks out. And I like this scene because the doctor's like, well, now do you believe us? And he goes, did you know about this? And he's just like, yeah, I knew about it. I just didn't want to believe it. So I thought that was really cool. He pretty much the whole movie, he was like, no, we're all good. But he knew that was going on. He just didn't. Since he didn't see it, he didn't believe it. So now that he believed it, and I like this scene also because there's something lurking in the trees, and they're not too sure what it is, and it ends up being old man Hector with a bear skin over him, and he like goes welcome, and then the big katana comes coming in and wrecking house and swatting everybody, and bodies are flying around.
Killed our parents, friends. That dude got. I remember he pulled out his bow and arrow, and he got hit so hard that he flipped over and fell onto the fire. But that bear. So, if I may tell this scene, so that bear. Okay, so there's like four vehicles there. That bear destroys every one of them. He like flips them over, throws them in the trees. He's just like killing it. There's one scene where talking about special effects where. They have to use perspective because if there's any filmmakers out there, you know what I'm talking about. They have to use perspective because the bear is obviously a guy in a suit. And so to make it look bigger, they have to frame it really differently. And there's one scene where this guy's running towards the camera. The bear's chasing him. But you could obviously see the bear at that point is a puppet and someone's just like holding it on stilts. Cause it's just like moving back and forth, running after this guy, and the bear runs like a person. It doesn't gallop like it did. If any of you saw The Revenant, that was a bear attack, is most reality you'll ever see in a movie, and it didn't run like that. No, it ran like a dude in a suit. if any of you have seen that YouTube video of that polar bear, that guy in a polar bear suit trying to walk across the ice. And he keeps falling down. And it kind of looks like that. But this bear is just destroying like all these people. There's like 20 people there with bows and arrows trying to fight it. And it's just like anybody that it hits does these flips. They like flip in the air. And so, but luckily for the villagers, there's underground tunnels. So John Hawks is there saying, get in these tunnels. So everybody, the doctor, Isley, the helicopter pilot, I think the sheriff is there too.
Yeah.
Victoria, Racimo, they all go and jump in the tunnels. And Adrian grabs a little bear cub. And I think that's why it was there.
Yeah.
Was they took its cubs. So naturally it came for them. But there's one scene where they're hiding. And this scene's really cool. Probably one of the coolest parts of the movie because they're in these tunnels and John Hawks tells them to be quiet. You know, and old man Mirai, he like backed up. He just backed up into the bushes. And so they're down there and everybody's quiet. And the scene goes on, I think, for a good 2 or 3 minutes of them just being quiet because you're in the theater when you're watching this too and you're trying to be quiet, you know. So they're sitting there and they're trying to be quiet and then like the sheriff, you know, he's going to stick his head out because he thinks that. Oh, and one thing that was really scary was when they're down in the tunnels up above, you can still hear the bear killing people. And like you can hear guys screaming and then like, you know how bears will attack. They'll leave their prey. They'll walk on and then they'll come back to them. You can tell it's doing that because some of the guys, you can hear them groaning and calling for help. And then you can hear the bear going back and just shredding them up. But one of the scenes I thought was cool was when they're all quiet in the tunnels and the sheriff goes, and, you know, it's been a while and they think it's gone. Okay. So the sheriff goes up to see if the coast is clear and he sticks his head up and all you see is his legs. Just you hear this crunching noise first and then he kind of yelps and then his legs just start to go side to side. That bear's thrashing him around and then they pull him back down and he has like no face. And they just show the bear. Katahdin goes and picks up its dead cub and goes off into the woods. And then the old man is sitting there just watching it leave. But I think the one of the coolest effects is in the reflection of his glasses. You see the flames of the village that the creature destroyed. And that's pretty much, that was like one of the main action pieces of the film was the bear's attack on that village.
Yeah. I've always liked that. And that scene when the sheriff goes up to check, I just recently watched this and at first, I mean, I was like, unless they did, they didn't do a cutaway scene. It was all like one shot. So I wasn't.
It was sure. One shot.
Yeah. Did they like put a mask on him real quick?
They probably like when he went up, they probably just had like, they probably just had prosthetic pieces already and just kind of slapped it on his face.
And squirted some blood on it and dropped him.
Yeah, just real quick. So I thought, you know, that was pretty cool.
The actual Katahdin was played by actor Kevin Peter Hall. I had no idea. He'd done a ton of stuff. He was the Predator in the first two movies. He was Harry in Harry and the Hendersons. A ton of
other. He was the in that movie. That movie, 1980, I believe, 1980 or 81. Underground cult horror film called Without Warning. He played the alien in that. And what's ironic was that movie is kind of like he played an intergalactic hunter. And then years later, he would go on to play Predator, who's an intergalactic hunter. But yeah, Kevin Peter Hall was the alien in that movie. Any diehard horror fans out there, check that movie out. Shout Factory, I believe, put it out called Without Warning. It's with Jack Palance, Martin Landau, and Kevin Peter Hall as the alien. That's what it says on the cover. So yeah, that movie is definitely worth that. It's cheesy 80s horror, but that's what we love, man. Me and Nez are 80s kids, so that's our stuff.
I had no idea he was Katahdin. I just glanced down and saw his name. I was like, whoa. But after that whole scene, I mean, this was kind of sad right here. We go up. It's daytime. Hector is standing there just crying because his whole little village is destroyed. And that was pretty much the last of their old ways. Cause he had, I don't know if they had teepees for that tribe, but that's what they had. But that was the last of their little original village. And it was all burned and it was all gone. And he was sad for that. And they're like right after that, they were pretty much stuck. We're miles away from any kind of civilization, so and we have no ride because Katahdin just wrecked house on all their vehicles. So they're like, well, we got to do something. So let's sack up and let's get going. And they had to make a stretcher to, I believe,
the helicopter.
Yeah,
the helicopter pilot.
Yeah, he was still alive. He just couldn't walk. So they kind of just made a makeshift stretcher and they go taking off. But John Hawks, he ends up just kind of taking off, going, look, I'm going to go run and try to find something. He ends up finding an old logger truck, a little 4x4 truck. So that kind of helps out. And these logging roads are pretty rough. They're not just like regular dirt roads. Some of them are, but there's times where they're really rough. There's logging roads up where I live, and they're like really bad. So because they're putting along super slow, maybe like at a slow jog pace, because there's just the roads are, they just clear them enough. They know they can get their big trucks through. I mean, there's still big rocks and everything sticking out of the ground. So they're just barely putting along. I did love this scene because they're just driving down the road and they have a spotlight and they're kind of looking around. Then all of a sudden Katahdin just comes out of nowhere and just one swat and the whole truck just flips over. They all run out and fuck it, they all end up taking off. But the dude, the helicopter pilot, was strapped to the top of the truck, and they said, "Well, sorry, bro," and they just ran.
He just left him there. And
I love this scene was cool because he was laying there screaming. All you see is the back of Katahdin. You just see his back goes in front of him, and then when he walks away, his head's the helicopter pilot's head's gone. Well, you hear this loud, and then they moves away, and his head's gone. So, they all end up just hauling ass, trying to get away from it, and they end up getting to the lake. And I don't know
how. Oh, hold on, but before that though, was it before that when Isley?
Oh, that's
Mr.
right,
Mr. Isley said, "There's a radar station. I can run to it, and so you guys go that way, and I'll run to the radar station." So he takes off. And while he's walking, while he's almost there, he hears these flies buzzing. So he walks in these bushes and he sees that cub laying there all dead with all flies. So he knows. And then Katahdin comes out like right by him. So he hauls ass and then he's running up the road and I guess Katahdin's coming after him. And then he tries to climb the fence and then he can't. So then he tries to go under it and he's almost there. He's almost there. And then Katahdin gets him by the legs. You just hear his legs getting crunched up. So yeah, he buys the farm right there. But now, you know, after the truck crash and, you know, and so now they get to the lake.
They all get to the lake and they jump in. They just like start swimming. This was kind of messed up, but I understood what he was trying to do here. The old man, Hector, he stopped and he turned around, was trying to talk to Katahdin, but while everyone else just jumped in and just started swimming, Ramona realized that he's not there. So she turns around, she sees him standing there. She starts screaming for him and he's standing there. I can't remember what did he say to it? Do you remember?
He just says, Katahdin, and then it stopped. Well, prior to that, when Victoria looks back and she sees him standing there, Katahdin comes running out of the bushes, but it literally comes running at him like a dude in a bear suit. It just comes like lumbering down the road. And it's like, I guess this bear, to give you some perspective, this bear is like 12 feet tall. It's huge. It's bigger than a normal bear. So then he yells, Katahdin, and then it kind of stands up and looks down at him. And he's looking up at it, and then she turns around and sees. Tell him what she sees.
She screams, and then when they show him again, you see the Katahdin. I assume he's like bit him by the head or something, and he's you just see his body just swinging around, and you hear him screaming. You could totally tell it's just a rag doll, but that was pretty sad. I was like, oh, weak, and he was trying to keep it real and it got him. So
yeah, like when Billy Bear, when Billy stopped to fight the predator,
that's right.
And that stupid alien has to go and cheat and be all invisible.
Yeah. I don't know how big this lake is, but they must've been really good, super fast swimmers to swim from one side to the other, or maybe it was kind of, on not so big of a part of the lake, but they ended up swimming from one side to the other. And luckily it was right by their cabin. Did you realize that?
Yeah, they swam right to the dock.
Yeah, right to the doctor and Adrian, they had rented a cabin up there and they swam right to the dock. So they got up onto it and, yeah, they thought they were all safe because you could see in the distance, it was kind of a little misty. You could see the Katahdin like slowly walking into the water. And you just kind of see like a silhouette of it. You really can't see much of it. But right then it totally looks like a big giant grizzly bear. So you could see the outline of it and it just kind of waddles into the water and just like sinks. So. They're all good.
Adrian had that. She had the live cub.
Oh yeah.
That was their proof. And then while they were swimming, it started to like chew up her neck. And her husband, the doctor, grabbed it, and it was about to kill her. So she just let it go. And then I guess it sunk. It drowned. So they get to the dock. They turn around. They see Katahdin in the water, and then they see bubbles like bloop, bloop, and then the bubbles stop. Then they're all happy.
They're all sitting there laying there. Oh yeah, we're all good. And then all of a sudden they see more bubbles. And then all of a sudden it just comes splashing out of the water. I mean, all within like a minute or two. So that bear, I don't know. I know bears can swim, but this one must've been hauling ass underwater.
He was doing a breaststroke.
They all get super scared. They run into the cabin, and he busts in there, breaks the roof, and this is when John Hawks buys it. I always like this because when he pulls out his bow and arrow, looks all super cool, but he wasn't fast enough. He gets one swat, and John Hawks goes down. They all kind of take refuge in the cabin for a second, and then Tilly comes crashing through the roof, and the doctor shot him, didn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah, he filled
shot him. Shot it a couple times. John Hawks got it too with a couple arrows.
Yeah. He fills it up with some buckshot. It kind of goes down, and the doctor grabs an arrow and just jumps. This scene's funny. He just runs and jumps and lands on top of Katahdin and just starts stabbing him like in the face and wherever, in the neck, whatever, and just it was pretty much dead already, full of buckshot, but he just added the extra stabs in it. Then he sunk.
Actually, it after he shot it, it grabbed him. It got him in a bear hug.
Oh, that's and right.
He took one of Hawks's arrows like out of its chest and stabbed in the eye, and then it like kind of it did that thing where it let him go, and then it grabbed its eye like a raccoon. It's like, ah, oh, like my eye, my mutated eye, and then. It falls backwards. It just falls backwards in the water. It looks like a stuffed animal at this point. It just like falls backwards into the water, and it's just kind of floating there on its back. And then for whatever reason, the doctor does his little war cry, and he grabs an arrow and jumps on it and just starts stabbing it, and then it sinks. And then I remember seeing this at the theater when he did that. It was already dead, but he has to, rah! And he jumps on it, and then the whole theater started cheering. And I remember looking at Mom, and I was like, what? Why? It's already dead. And she's just like, I don't know. It's just watch. You know, I was like, I like that rat movie better. But yeah, it just sinks or something. Yeah, it's dead.
And then it's just like a quick jump to the next day, and you see an airplane flying off, and it's obviously Adrian and the doctor flying away. We never really know what happened to Ramona. I mean, all right, hey, hopefully we'll see you. I assume they had their proof. They probably had divers go in and drag that bear out. So, because they never really said any kind of wrap up to what happened. When the Environmental Protection Agency finds out the proof and everything, we never know any of the answers that they get, because you just see a plane flying over, and it's all nice, happy music, and all of a sudden, rah, this other mutated bear pops up in the screen. And this one looks really stupid.
I didn't understand. It looked like one of those monsters in like Power Rangers.
Yeah.
It just kind of like jumped up and looked just really like, okay, what else you got? It was probably like the first one they did. And then they're like, no, let's make it into a bear. And I don't know. But it was, all that. The 80s were good for that. The happy resolve music at the end, and then got to like just kick you in the nuts one more time. Boom, like Carrie or the best one. Your favorite film has the best one. But yeah, dude, I don't know. But that's prophecy. It's well worth a look if you got, a rainy day to just watch some TV and check it out, man. Check out.
Yeah, I mean, I'm looking at Wikipedia right now, and this is the last sentence. The next day, Vern and surviving Maggie fly over the forest, unbeknownst that another mutant creature, then in parentheses, the cub's father, is still active inside the forest.
Oh God! The cub's father.
You knew there was more. I kind of think that both of them at one time were on the scene fighting, because that guy ran pretty far. Isley ran pretty far to the power station, and I assume that was the mother. And then whatever was chasing them gotten. Knocked over the Jeep or something, or I don't know. I just kind of have a feeling that at one point or another, both of them were tag team in the group, but who knows? We never know the outcome of what happened. And I don't believe there wasn't a second movie. So, this was pretty much it. And I'm glad that
I think I'm going to make the sequel.
I'm glad they didn't follow it up with something cheesier. after this one. But I mean, this one was good, man. I liked what it was. I liked the messages behind it. And other than it dealing with real native issues of native tribes battling these paper mills. But some people go, well, stop using paper products and all this and this and that. That's not what they were trying to do. It was just more of they're destroying more than that they're putting up, because when all these loggers say, well, when we take down trees, we plant more. And that was kind of like another movie. It's called Clear Cut. That was the same thing. They were battling the natives were there. That was in Canada. They were battling with the paper mill as well. And that's what was going on in this one. And that does go on, really. That really does go on here in America. And some people, no, it doesn't. It does. And the issues of the racism with the local town folks towards the Native Americans. Because Isley said, oh, they're just drunks. They don't do anything. They just hang out on the res. And that's real, because they say that about where I live here in Susanville. The town people said, oh, they're all those Indians up there on the lower and upper res, they're just drunks and they don't do anything. Man, there's a lot of hard workers up here. I mean, I can say that for them, too. I know there's a lot of drunks down in town that aren't native, but I'm not the one to call that out towards people. But I mean, that's just how it is. I mean, that's life. I mean, it's fucked up and everything, but I mean, that's real. And that's what was going on in this movie. I mean, the white people, I mean, and that's what they were. They were just being real racist towards the natives, accusing them of murder just because their people disappear. And it was just, and them destroying the environment using chemicals that goes into the water. I mean, it may not create big giant mutant bears that go on a killing spree, but that was real. That was real talk. They were talking about how it was messing up the stillborns and messing up the animals and everything. And it was just that was all real talk. I mean, you take out the monster out of this movie and the rest of it was right on there. It was all true. Wouldn't you say?
Yeah, it could be if you take the mutated bear out, it could be a movie within itself. It could be it could be either a mystery, an action film, a movie with morals. I mean, it could be anything. The bear was just kind of, I think the bear was just symbolic of the violence that happens on both sides. Cause like you said, you know, they're blaming the natives about, you know, about these murders, about their men disappearing. But, you know, ultimately it's something that the white man created, you know, cause the natives didn't create that. They didn't make that bear like that and crazy. I mean, it for it to be, you know, also for it to be just like a rampant killer bear, the reason for it was because of the chemicals in its brain were driving it crazy. So it turned rabid and it turned just, you know, killing everything in its path. And that's just, and then it still had bear instincts, you know, protecting its young and defending its territory. But you know, ultimately, you look at the whole story, and it is an environmental story about, you know, there's racism involved, and there's violence, and there's just and virtually those loggers, you know, the way that their company operates out there is they're basically lawless. You know, they don't have the police, any kind of police forces. They deal their own brand of justice with chainsaws and chains and what have you. So. That goes in tune with a lot of stuff that's going on in the outer territories where these pipelines are. You know, you don't know what they're doing to the people out there. You never hear about it. And then the cops don't go out there. You know, they sure as hell didn't go out to Standing Rock to defend the native people. You know, they didn't go out there, and the native people were the ones getting, you know, water cannons and tear gassed and billy clubbed. But you don't see them, you know, they're there to protect the pipeline. So it's always going to be protecting the money. You know, that's the only, you know, and it's kind of funny. It's like in like natives, we can't be self-sufficient. If we become self-sufficient, then that means we're progressing. If that means we're progressing, that means we're coming too strong. That means, you know, like for example, Yeah, sure. Some of our tribes have casinos, but you know what? There's white law that protects that protects itself because it won't let the native become fully self-sufficient. You know, like in Hollywood, there's only, you know, select few films about native people that are genuine, but you don't see those films get in the mainstream, like Dance Me Outside, Clear Cut, you know, movies that have, you know, Wind River's probably the only one that's probably broke the mainstream surface, but you'll never see these kind of films that have reality because everybody wants us to be native safe. And by native safe, meaning they want us to be portrayed as the 1800s noble savage that still needs the white people to protect us. And God forbid you put a native on film that beats a white man's ass. We can't have that because natives aren't strong. And that's the way that we have to be seen is still, you know, we're still low-level bottom feeders, and that's the way society wants to see us, is like the Dances with Wolves type natives or the Smoke Signals type natives, you know, the ones that aren't, you know, that can't be too tough. You know, we can't be too tough in films unless we're going up against Predator, or, you know, unless we're, you know, being a killer in 48 hours, you know, unless we're being anything other than, you know, someone of power. You know, natives can't be seen in that light because, you know, according to the white man, you know, especially now with that jackass as a president, hey, man, we're still the conquered people. We're still dependent on government a lot. He probably still thinks we're depending on powdered cheese and powdered milk on the reservation. I mean, that's how much this dude's an asshole, and because he doesn't know. And I'm sorry if there's any Trump supporters out there, but, you know, hey, open your eyes, man. See how this world really is. And as far as natives go, no one's really ever given a shit about us unless, you know, Kevin Costner tells a story about us.
He even, there was some dealing with some kind of casinos, and there were, this was before he was president, they were talking to him, and because he was mad that, and I understand why he's mad. We were getting into his money because he wants to be the ruler in casinos in the area where the natives put up a casino. And they were asking, well, did you talk to him? He goes, yeah, they said they were natives, or they said they were Indians, but they didn't look like it. And I'm like, oh, but anyway, I mean, that's a whole nother show to get into. But the racial tension in this movie, I mean, especially for 79, this was written by David Seltzer. I believe he's Jewish, and he's written a ton of other awesome movies. Not all of them are awesome. But he's done a lot of good horror movies and non-horror movies. Directed Dave John Frankenmeyer. I don't know what else he's directed, but he's done a lot. Paramount Pictures put this out June 15th, 1979. The budget was $12 million. I assume it was for the actors because it wasn't in the special effects. I mean, but it's 79 and hey, they did what they can do. It did a killing, man. The box office was $54 million, so I mean, it did good. I mean, but sometimes I do mention this movie, and a lot of younger horror fans never even heard of this movie. When you say Prophecy, like you said earlier, they think of the Christopher Walken one, which is good. I've only seen the first one. I haven't seen the however many that came out after it, but. This is definitely something to watch, and it is something to open up your eyes to what's going on in our country, that's still going on in our country when it's dealing with some Native issues in this one. Not all of them. There's other Native issues that some movies tackle, and Mike said, like, there's some movies that just don't get the mainstream. And Ewan mentioned Dance Me Outside, and that was, oh. That one is kind of a really tough watch to get to because it's dealing with violence and murder of women, Native women. And that was pretty much what Wind River was. And that movie is amazing. I love it. It's my number two favorite movie of the year so far. I think that one was so big was only because of Jeremy Renner and Elizabeth Olsen. Two amazing actors. I love both of them. and all their other work, as well as the writer and director. He's written and done some good stuff, but Wind River is definitely an amazing movie that I think everyone should see. But this one, Prophecy, man, I mean, I loved it. Even as a young kid, I remember my dad telling me the native issues in this were real, because I'm 8 years old. We're 8 years old when this comes out, and we're not thinking about how natives are being treated. We don't really. We're just about. We're waiting for the next Star Wars movie, and still playing with our toys.
but
I mean, this is a good movie, man. It's a good horror movie. It's got a good message without the monster and everything. But this is something that I think every horror fan should check out. I mean, I do love it. I can't think of anything else to say about it. Can you?
Well, just real quick. So John Frankenheimer is actually a well-known director who is looking at his past films. If there's any Robert De Niro and Sean Bean fans out there, you might want to check out this movie he did in the 90s called Ronin, with Robert De Niro, Jean Reno, Sean Bean's in it. I don't know how to pronounce her last name, but she plays the president's wife on Designated Survivor. Kiefer Sutherland is the president in that show. But he's also done that very weird but good special effects, Island of Dr. Moreau, with Marlon Brando, the late, great Marlon Brando, and Val Kilmer.
That little guy
I say the special effects are good because the late Stan Winston did the animal effects for the animal men in the film, and any fans of Stan Winston know the guy was just awesome as far as special effects go. John Frankenheimer also did the 1962 classic The Manchurian Candidate, as well as The Birdman of Alcatraz, starring Telly Savalas. But those are just a few of his hits that he's done. And then, so if you look at the spectrum of things that he's directed, he's very diverse. Yeah. Like this was a horror movie with, you know, kind of horror action. And this for him to take on something like this, that's pretty cool. It's like, okay, you know, and then the next thing he would do is a drama, and then he would do a comedy, and then a Western. And it's like, you know, that shows the mark of a good director is his diverse vision.
He also did the 2000 classic Reindeer Games with Ben Affleck. Did you see that one?
I am answering your question right now with my silence. No, I'm not. I don't know. Ben Affleck and I have a very weird relationship, so.
they robbed the casino, Indian casino.
God, see that right there. That just you. Oh God, who is the girl in that? Is that Charlize Theron?
Yeah, Gary Sinise, Lieutenant Dan, he's in it. Machete, Danny Trejo. Clarence Williams III.
Clarence William III, his best performance ever was in Tales from the Hood.
Yeah.
Oh, the shit.
Isaac
you
Hayes.
Want the shit. Isaac Hayes was in that too?
He's Ron Jeremy.
okay. Who played the Indians in that? Ron Jeremy?
You know what?
Trejo?
I saw it once. I don't. If they had some in it, they might have just been in the casino walking around. I don't think, unless someone can correct me. I seen this once, and all I remember is they were robbing an Indian casino.
My God.
That's all. See? I can remember. Oh, another movie that John directed was an awesome movie. It came out in 77, Black Sunday. I remember seeing this in the theater. I just remember there was a bomb in a blimp, and it crashed into a soccer stadium. They were somewhere. I can't remember exactly where.
Was that Robert Shaw? Quint? Wasn't Quint in that?
Yeah.
Okay.
Him and Bruce Dern. I seen that once. Just in the theater when it came out, because my dad wanted to see it, and I was kind of like, all right, cool. And I remember falling asleep and waking up at the end. I just remember there was a shootout with helicopters in the blimp. But yeah, man, this guy's done a ton of good movies. But yeah, and he directed this awesome flick, Prophecy. So if you guys haven't seen it, man, check it out. As far as this, I mean, that Prophecy, man, that's it. I got one more show to do for my Halloween Havoc, and then you guys will hear from me next year on all this. But you'll also hear other stuff throughout the year, and you're also going to get our wrap-up show of Indigenous Comic-Con, which will be in a couple weeks in Albuquerque, New Mexico at the Islita Casino and Resort, taking place November 10th through the 12th. We will be there for the whole thing. Mike here has a Native horror panel that's on Friday, and I believe that is at 1 o'clock. And the screening for The Smudging is 5 o'clock Saturday night.
Yep.
And
it is the feature film.
We will be there. I don't really know what we're doing, but we'll be there. But Mike's plate is full. So, come to the panel, come to the screening, come to the table, and meet the man himself, a.k.a. Bad in The Smudging, and Bad again in the upcoming Mashego, also starring myself and my son Mark, but he's asleep on the couch. So, but yeah, my son Mark will be there with us, so... meet him before he becomes a big famous star. So, any of you
is he,
over 21,
is he still single?
Yep. Any of you over 21, single ladies, my son will be there. So, you got anything else?
Bring your moms. No. everybody, thanks for listening. Thanks for supporting my brother's podcast. And just encourage him to do more, because he's getting out there, and I think it's really good what he's doing, because it opens everybody's eyes up to a lot of things, like in this show, talking about issues coming from two Native people, and especially from Macnez. Pay attention to the things he says, because he doesn't bullshit. He's a straight shooter, and he does listen. He's a good listener, and as well as you guys are, and just support Macnez Podcast, E Society, Horcopia, Jesse Blind Frankenstein, and all the other guys that are podcasting out there, and Kevin's in Macnez's troop, man. You guys are hustlers and rustlers. So you guys keep doing your thing, man, because you guys get the news out there, and keep pulling no punches, because you know truth hurts, but you know what? The healing is very it's very needed. So yeah, man. Keep up the good work, brother.
Hey, well, quick before we go, is the screening just for the con attendees, or is it, do you know anything?
I believe the screening is for the con attendees, but there, anybody that feels road trip-ish or adventurous, 2 weeks after that, on November 25th in Albuquerque at the Guild Cinema, we'll be having another screening for The Smudging, and that's at 1 p.m. on Saturday, November 25th. That's in Albuquerque, New Mexico at the Guild Cinema. If you wish to make a trip out there, there are tickets available on Eventbrite. Just go to eventbrite.com and search The Smudging. But as far as ICC goes, I believe it's just people that are attending. So hopefully, you know, maybe... if we find out on Friday if it's open, we'll let you listeners know.
Yeah, just if you follow us on Facebook, we'll throw it out there, Twitter, Instagram, all that. And not sure if they're charging, if other than for con attendees, but first one to get a hold of us before, and you can walk in with us. So Yeah, that's gonna be it this episode. Hey man, thanks for coming on, and we'll be back in a couple weeks, and we will be in Albuquerque, New Mexico. I am gonna put out daily wrap-ups for that week, kind of like what I did for San Diego Comic-Con, because this is my first time, both of us, our first time attending this con, so we have no idea what's down there and everything. So hopefully I can get some interviews with some people, and yeah, you'll hear Mike and I blab, as well as my son Mark, and hopefully get our sister Melanie on this show. So, definitely.
Dude, there's a cosplay thing going on too. So I think you inspired me to. I'm gonna bring a Katahdin suit. I think I'll just get a full bear suit, and then on half of it, I'll just like roll around in some oatmeal or something, and you know, then I'll be chasing. You know, I'll be chasing people through the thing. So yeah.
Dude, I wonder if you did that. I wonder if anyone would know who you were. That would be awesome. I mean, so other than us, maybe one person would know, but I don't know. Wait until we're rich and famous before we do that, because that's going to be kind of expensive. Much less, I don't even know where to get a bear. I assume you can go to the Spirit store.
Spirit.
And get a bear suit, but I don't know. But
I'll do a Fozzie Bear one with the hat and the scarf. I'll just go full out, you know, Katahdin Fozzie. Oh, real quick, tomorrow night, dude, we got to do a show. I got to give you my take on John Carpenter in concert.
Oh, that's right.
So,
oh.
Man, I cannot go finally get to see. Man, I wished I would have forked out the extra $200, though. I would have loved to have chilled with them in the room and get stuff signed. But those tickets went. They went fast. Yeah, the VIPs. But regardless, man, I'm seeing him tomorrow night. So
is it just Halloween stuff or everything?
It's everything.
All right, cool.
And yeah. Including the stuff, his lost themes from his two albums he did. He's doing that stuff too.
Cool, right on. Yeah, definitely. We're recording this late, but yeah, definitely. Let us know how it was and everything. So, but that's it this episode, guys. We'll come back to. Like I said, in a couple weeks with all our ICC stuff and whatever else we get into down there. So, hey, everyone, live your dreams. Rock hard and skate fast. On fire, burning fire.